Hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of Databook, a Chief Healthcare Executive podcast. My name is Skylar Jeremias, and I'm an assistant editor at CHE. Today, I will be joined by Dr. Waqaz Al-Sadiq, founder and CEO of Biotricity. We discussed how telehealth and remote patient monitoring will help shape healthcare going forward and what challenges lie ahead. We also talked about how the Biden administration's American Rescue Plan has impacted these healthcare technologies and what efforts are being taken to ensure that they continue to be accessible to patients. So to start us off, can you tell us a bit about Biotricity and where your company fits into the telehealth and remote patient monitoring space?
For sure. So, you know, Biotricity, we launched the company and we started the company because we saw a gap in the marketplace where, you know, in the world of monitoring or in the world of diagnostics, there's this idea that people are monitored, and it's actually not, that's exactly not the case. People are actually using devices that record their data, and then they bring it back to the physician or the hospital, and then the data is downloaded. So we felt the future was in connected health and connected devices. And so, we launched Biotricity to address that need. We built the platform. We applied that in cardiac space. So today what our device is used for, and it's applied in remote cardiac diagnostics, is for high-risk patients. Instead of checking them into the hospital, instead of leaving them on a device that's not connected, you put them on our device. It's smart, so it's collecting all of your ECG and all of your data. And then if it detects an emergency, it lets the doctor know so he can deal with the emergency response. And so while the doctor's trying to figure out what's going on with you, you've got this layer of security where the device will communicate and say, hey, I caught this, anomaly. Can you please verify whether or not it is an anomaly or not, and deal with that? And so obviously with the pandemic, when you've got these high-risk patients and this whole shift towards telehealth, the idea of getting these patients out of the hospital so that they can self-isolate, they don't get this added risk of getting COVID, a device like ours was very critical.
How has COVID-19 changed what you do?
So, you know, from our perspective, it's really the same. The only thing that I would say that we've taken away from it is this idea of direct ship to home, right? We weren't doing that before, where the patient was actually going to the healthcare center, picking up the device and taking it home. So we created this whole concept of direct ship to home, integrated with telehealth, so you can actually do a remote prescription for the device, ship it out to the patient, and we integrated that very fast. It was a direction we were already planning on going, but we obviously accelerated that as a result of the pandemic. The other thing I think that really happened as a result of the pandemic is remote monitoring and intelligent monitoring or smart devices. This was, you know, everybody felt this was the direction. People were kind of doing it, but adoption curve was a lot, you know, it wasn't as pronounced, if you will, right? And what the pandemic has certainly done has created an awareness around the importance of such solutions. So we've become, what we've seen in the industry is that there's a lot more interest in these types of products and a willingness to work with them.
How has the American Rescue Plan affected healthcare access broadly and what you do specifically?
So the rescue plan, and I think there's multiple facets to what's going on in a general sense, because you've got multiple acts going on, right? You've got the Connect Act going on, you've got the rescue plan going on, you've got this whole transformation in telehealth. So, you know, I'll kind of take a step back and talk about it in a broader sense, if you don't mind. And what I find is that, so the one issue that we've seen pre-COVID was that the state lines were blurry in terms of telehealth coverage. Different states have different coverage. Some states had parity, some states did not have parity. You could not do cross-border televisits, so a doctor sitting in California could not see a patient sitting in Nevada. So there's a whole shift in this type of thinking because of the pandemic, because we were forced to do it, right? And then the access to telehealth became a focus. So that's where you see the whole idea around connectivity. And Biden was talking a lot about, hey, we need to make sure there's connectivity, because it's great if we expand telehealth, we expand Medicare coverage, we make this all available and as a tool. But if you don't have internet connectivity and rural Americans don't have access You know, how do you actually deliver the solution? So I think what is interesting and what is positive is usually government looks at things in a siloed approach and they're like, okay, great. We'll remove these issues. We'll make telehealth standardized. We'll make it care, but they won't consider the idea that, well, what if you don't have access to that? And I think what's nice about what's happening in DC, especially post-pandemic, is that they're looking at this connectivity piece aligned with the coverage piece. And I think that's a really good step.
We hear that telehealth and remote health services are here to stay, but there is discussion that reimbursement might shift to make these services less attractive. What do you foresee?
So I think what's going to end up happening is, so when CMS comes out, right? So, and you know, by and large, this is of course my opinion. When CMS comes out and they see an opportunity and they see something that is required, they put out a test bed and they analyze and they figure out, okay, how much is this really saving costs? How much is this really helping patients? What are the outcomes around it? And they kind of do that as a test bed and they incentivize it in the beginning with higher reimbursement. And if you look at this, this is by and large across all kinds of disease categories, all types of new technologies, because they want to look at what is the efficacy and what is the true quality metric delivered from a care perspective. Then when adoption happens, they say, okay, now we have all of this data because we incentivized all these people to use it. Let's really look at what is the true value that we're doing. And then they adjust pricing. So I think CMS has shown that they've done that historically. I think they will do the same thing here, which was first thing, everybody go and adopt. Let's collect a bunch of data and let's figure out how do we really impact. And I'll kind of add one little component to that, which is, you know, I think something like 80 cents of every dollar is spent on chronic patients. So chronic patients are, you know, patients like HeartBeat, patients that Biotricity's product is used on. Well, doing a telemedicine call on a patient that can have a stroke or a heart attack is great follow-up, but you need to get them enabled with technology as well, right? You need to get them a diagnostic, you need to get a device. So it's not just about the telemedicine call, it's about what does that telemedicine call integrate with. So I think that we know that telehealth has been incredibly useful for first line defense, right? But if we wanted to move it into second line defense and grab more value out of it, we have to figure out how to address chronic patients. So I foresee that there's going to be a tiered approach to telemedicine. There's going to be, hey, here are basic visits. You know, I've got a child, they've got a fever, it's past hours, or, you know, these normal sort of scenarios. And then we've got these chronic patients. And these chronic patients need a multitude of other things. So you need integration with blood tests, you need integration with diagnostic devices. And so I think you're going to have a tiered approach to telemedicine with tiered reimbursement models.
Can you compare the response to remote monitoring by commercial payers versus public payers like Medicare and Medicaid?
Yeah, sure. So, of course, we have seen the public payers struggling with the policy side, right? The pandemic, they changed it and they removed the state barriers and stuff like that. None of those issues existed in the private payer environment, right? Because the private payer environment, they spent and they understood that, hey, first line defense is more cost effective. So they adopted telemedicine for sure in a different way. I wouldn't say that one, if I had to recall, I could not tell you which one adopted it first, right? I think private and public, they both adopted it in a similar time horizon. I think the big difference was that there were barriers to utilization in the public sphere, right? Which is the lack of parity, treating a telemedicine visit different than a general practitioner visit. So all of these variables that made it more complex versus the private payer environment, which just, you know, adopted it. So I think that was the main difference that I see. I would not, without checking, I don't think one adopted faster. And I think that's also a misconception where people say, hey, you know, the public system is not necessarily always behind the private system, right? They have a different approach. But that's what I have seen.
What are the challenges ahead for broader use of telehealth and remote patient monitoring? Are there areas where it is well suited and others where an in-person visit is a must?
Yeah, so I think I'll kind of tie that back to what I was talking about chronic patients. So I think there's a number of issues. So let's break that down to buckets, right? One is just rural connectivity. There's a lack of access to care in rural environments outside of the suburbs. So, you know, obviously connectivity there is very, very critical. And then the other issue in those environments is that those patients don't have specialty care accessible, right? So rural patients, unfortunately, have, you know, a multitude of issues, right? One is, okay, do you have access to care? Okay, great. You have access to care, but specialty, you know, you're not going to have a cardiologist servicing a small, you know, a number of small towns. They're usually in the suburbs or in the urban metropolitan areas. So how do you bring specialty care and deliver that? So, you know, I think that really the focus needs to be first line defense. Let's create accessibility for basic visits. Second line defense, how do we use telehealth to address chronic patients, which means integration with remote monitoring devices, making devices cheap enough or kits cheap enough so that they can be delivered to a patient so they can use it in the comfort of their home, collect that data, and so that the doctor that is servicing them remotely has their vitals, has their biometrics, has additional information.
Who will develop guidelines for the use of telehealth and remote monitoring? Will it be left to professional societies such as ASCO or the AMA?
It's a good question. Usually, I mean, at the end of the day, it's the CMS who usually dictates all of this stuff. And even the private payer system follows what Medicare and Medicaid say. With that said, Medicare and Medicaid really do look at what these societies are saying, right? There's a reason why these societies exist, and they take that data point. So, you know, AMA is certainly going to make their case. They're going to collect that data. So CMS, what I have seen CMS do is they will go, they say, hey, this is our strategy. This is what we're going to do. They announce it. All of these societies then try to collect data and facilitate and position the value of that approach, while CMS then is pushing you know, the care providers to do this. They collect all of that data and then they do internal analysis and come back and say, okay, this is going to be our approach to the strategy. So if you look at what's happening right now on the healthcare policy side, right? So AMA certainly doing their research and whatnot. We've got the ACT going on, which is about making telemedicine more accessible. But then they're also creating a specialty within the health ministry, a group that's going to be looking at telehealth and access and care quality and all of that stuff. So they're creating a specialized group as a part of this whole approach. So I think that combined with you know, CMS and the societies are going to work together to come up with the conclusion.
And lastly, do you have any concluding thoughts?
So, you know, I think that the future, you know, like I said, why we started at Biotricity, I think the future really is this intersection of telehealth and connected remote devices. I think it's, you know, talked about less because I think everybody's excited about telehealth, but I really believe that this version of telehealth is not good enough because the biggest expense is actually chronic patients. So we really, what I'm really excited about is the intersection of telehealth and connected devices, because that is what's going to allow us to really deliver remote care to the individuals that are not only the most expensive on the system, but also the ones that need the most care, right? Why are insurance premiums going up, all of this stuff, is because these patients are coming in and we catch them late. So telehealth creates this accessibility, but it doesn't give us the data metric, right? So if someone's having a palpitation, or they think that they've had a heart attack, can we get a lab test out, right? And do a quick blood test and get all of this data and synchronized into one place so that we can deliver care to a patient. And those are the patients that end up in the hospital or in the ER because they don't know what's going on, and they end up you know, increasing our premium. So I really think, and what I'm most excited about is I think this step, we're stepping in the right direction, but we have two or three very important steps to go to make healthcare really more cost effective by addressing the biggest problem, which is the chronic patients.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Databook. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Chief Health Exec and on LinkedIn and Facebook. Until next time, I'm your host, Skylar Jeremias.